Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
It's so much more than just a profile picture. At Catholic Singles, our platform offers you many opportunities to get to know the person behind the picture. Sign up today at CatholicSingles.com.
In this special audio cast, we go deep and develop compassion for people struggling with mental illness. So sit back and...
One, two, three, listen.
If you're willing to talk, Father Leo is willing to listen. Get ready for a deliciously deep discussion of Shoot the Shiitake with Father Leo.
And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with me, your host, Father Leo, for a deep discussion as we enter into a very deep and meaningful experience with Eddie Augauer, who is a friend of mine, a member of my community of consecrated life. He's kind of looking into it, and we've known each other for a while, and we reconnected. And as we reconnected, I learned more about some of the things that he has gone through in his own life. And I've always known Eddie to be an incredibly joyful person. And so it's kind of sobering to hear his story about how he has struggled with mental illness. And that is something very powerful for me, because as a priest, it's my job to try to help bring healing to people. But guess what? There's only so much I can do. But the one thing I can do, as you'll hear about it in this deep discussion, is just develop compassion. And so what does that look like? Well, you're going to have to listen to this conversation with me and Eddie as we enter into a deep, deep, hopefully powerful, and hopefully even helpful discussion. And this episode is brought to you by The Table Foundation, my nonprofit group that seeks to harvest the power of food to do good. We support chefs in the hospitality industry, and we provide formation for people coming out of the prison system, ex-cons, as returning citizens. You can learn more at thetablefoundation.org. And when we return, we'll have what I would call a sincere and beautiful and meaningful and powerful discussion about mental illness. We'll be back in just a moment. And welcome back for this deep dish discussion. Eddie Augauer, thank you for joining me for this pretty serious topic.
Yeah, thank you, Father. I appreciate it. Really, we're talking about mental illness here. There are many different types, of course. We're going to focus, I think, on my experience with depression and bipolar disorder.
So let's do this first. How did you even know you were diagnosed with this? Like, when did you discover this? Who told you clinically that you were depressed?
Sure. I think I was about 21 when I experienced my first depression.
What did it feel like? What did you go through?
I went through a breakup with my girlfriend, and it was devastating, really. I wasn't prepared for it. I also, at the same time, lost my job, and then I had to move in my parents' house. So it undermined my self-esteem. My confidence in myself. And
well, at 21 years old, that's not so bad.
Right. 21, it's also can be a good preparatory thing because it helps you change your perspective on life.
Sure. But who told you that you were?
About 5 years later, I actually ended up seeing a doctor who was a community mental health expert, and she prescribed me meds. And she said, you have depression. And she gave me meds, and unfortunately, she gave me a medicine, as everybody knows, called an antidepressant. Kicks you off in hypomania or mania, which is what it did to me. And that also affected my life very deleterious ways.
Okay. Can you tell me about that?
Sure. The antidepressants can be like gasoline on a fire, truly, because you're looking at increasing... If someone has bipolar disorder, which is my actual diagnosis, the antidepressants lift you up higher and higher to the point where you're making bad decisions.
Really?
You can make financial decisions that are very poor. Mm. Oftentimes people become hypersexual. They can ruin their relationships with their spouse or whoever. You can spend money you don't have and buy all kinds of things that you don't need or seem strange, like a case of snake bite kits or something.
Is that what you did?
No, I have a friend who did that.
Okay. Well, it wasn't you. So you were 21 years old, break up with a girlfriend, and depression just sounds kind of normal. How did it get to bipolar?
Right. That's a good question. What happened is I called up my doctor, who was very good doctor that I had, and I was about 26 at this time, and I was crying, I was weeping, I was very low.
Is this because of the breakup still?
No, I was over that. This was just standard depression symptoms.
Okay.
That people can get very weepy.
And did something trigger all of that? I mean, at what point did you just start becoming just emotionally down?
Right. Well, first of all, bipolar or depression are very, bipolar is the most genetically related of the illnesses. So it's very inheritable.
Okay.
And for me, I inherited it in my family. And unfortunately,
Do you know who else in your family had it?
I know that my father was diagnosed with it, but it was much later in life.
Okay.
And so I never had any insight. I didn't know what was going on to me. It can lay dormant and get triggered by negative events. Usually it comes in twos or threes that bowl you over.
And twos or threes, how do you mean?
Well, for me, like I mentioned earlier, losing my job, moving home, breaking up with my girlfriend.
Okay. So two or three triggers that can just do it, you know?
It's like
flat tire, you know, dog dies, and lose your job.
Precisely.
But dude, that would do it to anybody.
That could trigger it.
To be honest with you, and like even someone who doesn't have that clinical diagnosis, but what makes exactly a diagnosis clinical at that point? Mm-hmm. Because that just sounds kind of like things that you can't control, but for you, it was clinical.
Right. Well, I was mentioning my psychiatrist who was good, and I called him and I was down and crying, and he said, come in and see me the next day, and I did, and I just bounded into his office and I said, hey, what's going on, doc? How are you doing today? And he just looked at me in one sentence said, you're bipolar. And in a sense, it was a relief because I had a name for it. But when I started Googling what it meant, what it entailed and the symptomology, I was extremely scared.
So he just simply said it just after hearing you cry one day, and then all of a sudden you're in a super good mood
the next day.
And that is bipolar.
That
is a symptom of being bipolar.
That can oftentimes be what it takes to diagnose bipolar, just as simple as that.
I mean, I hate to ask this question, but do you think that maybe they put that in your head and it kind of stuck with you? Like the way, you know, sometimes people say, oh, you're this, and people start to believe it when they're that.
Yeah, and that's a good question, Father. I would say that after I started doing the research, and thank goodness for the internet, I was able to read other people's experiences, see what all of the different symptoms are of the illness, and notice them in my past, in my life, before I was diagnosed.
Tell me what some of those symptoms are in case anybody is just listening right now and they say, okay, well, I have been in a good mood one day and I've been pretty depressed the next day. What else?
Sure. A lot of people are familiar with what depression is and less so with bipolar.
Yeah.
Bipolar really takes you into places that most people don't go. For instance, I could walk into a party and light up the room, take over the room. That doesn't mean they're bipolar, but it can be certainly a symptom. Also, for me, I became extremely funny, extremely outgoing. Those are also symptoms that are very common.
Yeah, I mean, because I remember you, because like full disclosure, we knew each other for a while, and I just knew that you were very excitable, even almost hyper, you know? But it was just, you were fun.
But
you were struggling with bipolar at that time.
I was. And it's really endorphins, internal morphines, or what they're called, are going off at such a high level that you feel like king of the world. It's extraordinary. You're basically on internal drugs, in a sense, without taking anything.
Okay. And then the very next moment you could
easily crash down. And the differentiation, actually, is there are two types. There's bipolar 1 and bipolar 2.
Okay. Tell me about that.
And I have been diagnosed with bipolar 2. Bipolar 1 is you can cycle up and down in a day a couple of times, and you can become extremely manic to the point where you're doing things that are highly irrational. I've lost 3 friends to suicide.
Oh my gosh.
As a result of bipolar. One of them was solely depression, but the rest were bipolar.
Okay, so we're talking about, and then what's depression, what's bipolar 2?
Sure, so bipolar 2 is you don't swing up nearly as much. You spend a lot more time, maybe almost 3/4 of your time in the lows. When you do swing up, it's very similar to bipolar 1 mania, but it doesn't last as long, and it's usually not as high. But you get a lot more depression time.
Okay. And so in your case, you're bipolar 2, and you get a lot more depression time. I mean, is this conversation depressing you right now, thinking about it, or?
No, not at all, especially in the light of the fact that maybe it can help somebody, even just one person. That makes me feel better.
Okay, good. I mean, because as I'm having a conversation with you, I'm just wondering, what are the triggers for you? Like, do you know what they are?
Yeah, a huge percentage of people with bipolar disorder will abuse substances, alcohol, drugs, sex, whatever, in order to self-medicate, even if they're not aware that they are of this illness. So I had to be careful in the past with drinking because I have to take medication. Medication is very important, and we'll talk about that, I'm sure, in a moment.
Sure.
But I limit myself to 2 drinks a day or none because it doesn't go well with the medication, and it can, of course, lend itself to depression, alcohol being a depressant.
Okay, so a trigger is excessive alcohol.
Right.
What else? Is weather an issue?
For me, it is. Oftentimes, what goes along with some of these mental illnesses is something called, or at least with depression and bipolar, is seasonal affective disorder,
yep.
Which is where...
Sad, right?
Sad.
Mm. And they would get sad lamps, like lights yes. that you'd have to sit under.
Which I have.
Okay.
And they work.
Yeah, I believe you.
I used to study when I was in school, and I used my sad lamp to study with, and it's actually sent me up into hypomania, which it can do.
What?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it just seems like... I mean, was there like a limit that you could sit underneath that lamp? I mean, because yeah. it's just a normal light.
No, it's not. It actually it has 10,000 lux, so it simulates the lux of the sun.
Okay.
So if you just buy any light out there, sometimes they'll market them as the happy light. Well, if it doesn't have 10,000 lux, then you're wasting your time and money.
Okay, and so, but there was a limit for you, and you would sit under it a little too long, and it would send you out of your...
I would, yes.
Wow.
And some of that had to do with the environment I was in my vocation that I was seeking at the time in life.
And so tell us about that. I know it, but our audience doesn't.
Sure. I was in the seminary for 3 years, and it was not fully a case of bipolar mistaken identity trying to somehow heal myself. I felt at the time a need and a call to serve other people and to serve God. And I thought the correct way would be doing that in the church. And I knew that at the very least, I wanted to explore that.
Sure.
That didn't mean that I had a vocation, but oftentimes they say people go to the seminary because there they discover...
They're running from something.
They yeah. can be running from something. Or oftentimes it's just a place where they go to discern whether they have a vocation or not to the priesthood.
Okay. And so in your case, you were 21 years old. You had this experience. You got diagnosed at 25. At what age did you enter into seminary?
I didn't apply to the seminary until I was 31. I actually somehow cobbled together a career with the Discovery Channel and the other networks that they carry. And I was able to function there on and off as a freelancer because when I say off, I mean those were my down times when I couldn't function.
Okay, but you were still full-time employed.
Yes.
Okay. And so you were working in a professional environment. You were experiencing the ups and downs of bipolar. Were you medicated at the time?
I was medicated, yes. And that's a very important question, actually. I need to clarify that.
Sure.
People oftentimes go off of their medicine. They think that since the medicine's working, they're feeling better, they think that it's over.
Oh.
But it's just a chronic illness. It's like having diabetes.
For the rest of your life.
The rest of your life.
Okay.
And most people don't want to admit that. They don't want to take medicine and they don't want to be dependent on medicine because it makes you feel weak.
How many people do they know? I mean, has there been like some study that says, you know, that one out of 10 or something like that?
What I've read is that in any given year in the U.S. alone, 1 in 5 people will experience a mental illness.
Okay.
The numbers vary a little bit from what institution you quote. The amount that have bipolar is fuzzier because so much of it is undiagnosed or it's misdiagnosed.
Wow.
So there are oftentimes people that have depression that also have bipolar, but they don't recognize it because when you're in it, it feels like it's the right thing. It feels normal.
Mm.
And yet all the people around you see it before you do oftentimes.
And prior to this interview, you were just talking about how ubiquitous it is and people don't even recognize it.
Right. It's really a case of actually the numbers are between 10 to 11 years before somebody goes from symptomology to actual treatment. So that means they're suffering for 10 or 11 years, screwing up their life, doing things that they shouldn't be doing or wouldn't normally do.
Sure.
And so those...
And some people, society would look at that and be like, oh, these people are just F-ups. They're just complete rejects. They're just complete losers. And that's not true at all. Some of them are really struggling with things that are hereditary. They can't control it. And it's chemical. You can't control it. Unless you take medication. And then there's a responsibility factor. You got to take the medication.
Right. And then you got to continue the medication. Unfortunately, you know, you see a doctor, you see a psychiatrist, which incidentally is a difficult thing in this country because 60% of the counties in this country don't have a psychiatrist.
Okay. 60% of the country. That's just my oven, by the way, triggering me, saying it's time to put the chicken in the oven. But we can wait on that because I just want to keep asking that question. So there's a lot of people who don't even realize that they have depression.
Yes. It's almost like having dirty glasses and maybe you've had them for a long enough time that you just think that you're seeing life through these dirty glasses and that it's normal.
And that's the way it is.
That's just how it is until you, if you cycle up, which would be the bipolar side.
Cycle up. That's a term that I'm not familiar with, but you're talking about they kind of get this euphoria. Is that what you mean?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And they're just kind of going super excited. Nothing can stop them. They're going a million miles an hour.
Yes, it can get to that point if it's not slowed down by the medicine. Now, the psychiatrist is
now, difficult. Is medicine the only way that that can get slowed down?
Besides avoiding substances, exercise is one of the most important things you can do in order to maintain what they call euthymia. Euthymia is a normal state, which most people experience all the time.
Mm.
So if your parents die and you go into a depression, that is normal. It's called a situational depression. Anybody would be sad over that. But if you have actual depression, bipolar, and your parents die, it becomes magnified 10, 100 times.
Okay. You know what I want to do? I want to take a quick break because I got to put the chicken in the oven.
Yum.
And when we return, I'm going to speak more with Eddie Aragauer about what it's like as best as you can describe and what can we do to help. When we return with more Shoot the Shiitake, we'll be back in just a moment. And we hope you're enjoying this special episode of Shoot the Shiitake. And if you appreciate and learn from these experiences on how to engage the modern world, please prayerfully consider supporting us, as we can always use the help, by going to patreon.com/FatherLeoFeeds or shoot us an email and ask us questions at shoottheshiitake.com. And more importantly, spread the word and tell family and friends to sign up for this podcast on their favorite podcast platform. And again, to support us, patreon.com/FatherLeoFeeds. Please and thank you. And welcome back for this deep dish discussion with Eddie Aragauer, talking about depression as one form of mental illness, but then you're experiencing bipolar. And what I want to do is kind of get a little bit into your personal experience of it, because I would imagine while there are symptoms that characterize depression, mental illness, bipolar 1 and 2, it's unique to every individual. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. Each person experiences it differently, which makes it very hard for doctors to diagnose it correctly in a timely manner.
I mean, and there is a heck of a lot of it. I mean, a lot of the homelessness, for example, is in part due to, not just because they're a bunch of lazy slobs, but they're dealing with mental illness.
That's right. In fact, just driving over here today, I saw so many people that were homeless and panhandling and whatnot. And I suspected a very large percentage of them have some form of mental illness.
And so like a community, first of all, can help or not help? I mean, will you want to just be like, I just want to be left alone. I want to be reclusive.
A community in terms of friends and family support can help quite a bit.
Yep.
But they would have, of course, have to be educated to some degree as to what's going on. And most of the time they're not, because
and there's a stigma.
There's still the stigma.
Tell me about that.
Nowadays, you know, there's people are coming out of the closet, if you will, about mental illness and the stigma that is really affecting mental illness in such a negative way. People don't realize just how painful it is to have mental illness. And I've had a lot of maladies and physical pains, and the psychiatric pain is
physical
nothing.
Pains. What do you mean? Like, you're talking about like
just
joints,
sickness, or
because
joints
of the mental illness?
You know, that's actually a good question. I have chronic leg pain, which my doctor says is an expression of the mental illness, that it can, in other words, affect yourself, your body. There's no separation between the psyche and the body per se.
Yeah. And when we say psyche, people automatically go to mind, because that's what it is, but technically it means soul, psyche, you know, and so someone has to ask, is this a soul problem? I mean, are you good with God?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
right.
Like, you're in my institute, for God's sakes. You're
yeah.
kind of in a good place with your soul. You have a good relationship with God, but there really is something beyond your control. Hereditary, chemical imbalance, and so medication can regulate it. So you're also talking about a community being somewhat helpful, but they need to be educated.
Right. And then I was mentioning that the support group from friends or family is so key. And a lot of people don't have that. My experience from the mental illness community, my first experience was with a community mental health organization that gave me medicine.
Yeah. And do you think people just prescribe medicine just too quickly?
Yeah, they don't have a lot of tools, even though, you know, Prozac came out and was the big...
Oh my gosh, everyone's on Prozac, it seems.
It's the big banner headline medicine, has been. Fortunately, there's some new things coming out the doctors would take a medicine and pretty much throw spaghetti against the wall and see what sticks. And so you're just a guinea pig trying different medicines.
They would call it a cocktail to see if this cocktail works. I've heard that expression.
I take a cocktail of four medicines.
And is that working?
It works now, but it's taken a long time for me to get here.
Okay. Well, first of all, thank God that you're here, you know, and you're going through that. This idea of a stigma, though, we almost feel so sensitive that we can't even joke because we don't want to send you into depression. I mean, even just that word mental, it is now kind of politically incorrect. You know, it's like the word retarded for one point. I mean, it's like, I remember hearing that when I was younger. Now we can't say that at all. I just want to ask you, how do you feel when you hear those terms? Is it offensive?
If somebody puts you down or puts down anybody in the mental illness community, if you will, then of course it's offensive because you're being discriminated against.
Sure.
So I certainly don't like that, but I also am able to understand it because they're ignorant of these illnesses.
And so let's make sure people aren't ignorant. What is it like to go through a bout of depression? I mean, I don't even understand it, to be honest with you. Can you, as best as you can, without getting depressed, kind of go through a depression experience?
Sure. No, I won't get depressed. Unfortunately, the medicine's helping me there.
Good.
But I would say to go through it, it's your sense of reality. Maybe in a sense you could liken it to somebody falling in love. Their sense of reality has changed, and they are on a kind of a euphoric high and being in this love state. And unfortunately, when it wears off, they think that, oh, well, then this relationship should be over, or it's the wrong person for me. And it's just a temporary thing. So for depression and bipolar disorder, your reality is something that becomes at least temporarily changed. You're looking at the world no longer through rose-colored glasses.
Okay, so your perspective changes.
Your perspective
changes. But how do you feel?
There are a lot of different symptoms. Anxiety is a big one. The kissing cousins is a huge percentage, almost like 80.
Kissing cousins? What is that?
Kissing cousins is just an expression that they're hand in glove.
Okay.
So people who have depression, bipolar, almost all the time have some kind of anxiety disorder as well.
So anxiety. And I mean, obviously, they're just being very anxious about things or nervous, and they're maybe oversensitive, reactionary. Now, what about the thing that just makes you just want to cry? What is it? I mean, and is it suicidal?
Yeah, that's an extremely important question. Suicidality is very, very common. As I mentioned before, I lost friends.
That breaks my heart.
To suicide feelings, what they call suicidal ideation. That's the terminology they throw around amongst the mental health community.
Yeah.
And I'll have to tell you, I was out skiing in Colorado. And I cycled down, meaning I had a dip, where some people call it a crash. And I found myself going out for a walk and praying very hard to God. And I didn't know what to do. Literally, my body was moving towards Route 70 in Mack trucks. I wanted to kill myself. It's an irrational state of mind.
For no reason at all.
For no reason at all. My life was fine. Here I was skiing. I've been given a lot in my life. And I've been skiing in this beautiful ski resort in Vail.
Well, I think just for that very reason, from a pastoral point of view, and I don't want to focus on this too much, but just for anyone who's thinking, especially with family members who have committed suicide, your family member did not go to hell. Okay, I mean, I know at one point people thought that just because it is a breaking of the commandment, thou shalt not kill, including yourself. But I just need to let you know that there are some things that are outside of people's control, especially if it's suicide because of depression, mental illness, bipolarity. No, hardly the case.
That's right. And, you know, I mentioned the stigma of mental illness, but we've seen also there has been some development, some growth. For instance, in the church, people who committed suicide were not allowed to be buried.
Correct.
In a Catholic cemetery. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's just, we have to evolve with science, you know. Yeah. And so the science is helping to inform our faith because it's science con science with science. You know, it's a deeper understanding of what's going on in terms of someone else. Now, you know, what does somebody do if someone's going through depression? Like, what can I do?
If you're going through it or if a friend is going through it?
Okay, that's good. If you're going through it, if someone is going through depression right now, what can help?
Number one thing is to get a therapist. A good therapist.
Yeah, now, how do you find a good therapist? Because there's some people out there that just, like, want your money, to be honest with you.
I've had good therapists, and I've had some pretty bad ones.
Yep.
And word of mouth is key.
Yep.
What you need is somebody, not just a good listener. Obviously, that's important. But you need somebody who knows about the illness, who knows about bipolar disorder and knows about depression.
Yeah, I would imagine that there are some therapists who would just say, what I hear you say is, and they would repeat and they just annoy the hell out of me. So, I mean, do you need a therapist who also is just going to challenge you and say, you got to wake up right now, that's not real? But that can maybe trigger people.
Right. I've had, because you don't hear voices like you have schizophrenia, but you do hear voices.
Which is a different thing.
Totally different animal and a very painful one from.
Unbelievable.
It's a terrible mental illness. I've known some people who have what's called schizoaffective disorder, which is a combination of bipolar disorder and schizophrenia.
Good Jesus.
So that is a real, in itself, a kill. And I actually, that was somebody else. He wasn't really a friend, but an acquaintance who killed himself as well.
Man, this could depress me. I mean, this honestly could depress me because it just thinks like, well, what the heck can we do?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not the only one going through it. Your family and your friends, people who love you and care for you, they're going through it too. And so besides talking to a good therapist and obviously get your exercise, I think physical exercise is part of it, taking your medication, how about just like charity? How about just getting out there and getting involved?
When you get to a more level place where you feel more secure, then you can go outside of yourself. Before that, don't berate yourself because you're not being selfish necessarily.
Sure.
You're just doing self-care.
Okay.
And I find now that it certainly helps me to go out and do charitable works and charitable acts, though I know that my primary thing to take care of, almost in a sense, my spouse, is my illness.
Sure. Interesting. Okay. And you're single?
Yes.
Yep. You're single right now. And so this idea of you trying to take care of yourself as best as you can. And so the question is, how do other people take care of somebody who's struggling with mental illness, depression, bipolarity?
Sure. It's key that you get support through someone somewhere that loves you, even if they don't understand what you're going through. I've been hospitalized twice, and my family came and visited me. My loved ones were there for me, but they still didn't understand what I was going through, and they really can't unless they go through it themselves. I almost would like to be able to share it with somebody just for 30 seconds. So,
is there a support group?
There are support groups.
Do people go?
Yes.
Is it like AA?
Is it like AA? I've never been to AA, but...
I mean, yeah. You can see it's like a group where people just admit, I am struggling with this issue.
Yes.
But would it be helpful? Because, I mean, it's like, look, we've got a bunch of depressed people here. They're just going to take each other down. You know? I mean, is that...
Mm-hmm. No,
it seems like a little... I don't know. It sounds challenging to how to find a community.
Yes. If you can get a good support group, it's a great community because... One of the things is you benefit from other people's experiences, which good and bad, and you also benefit from their advice on different medications, or even as I mentioned earlier, a therapist that would be from word of mouth. That would be from a support group.
Okay. And all right, I'm a priest, so I'm going to just ask, what about the spiritual life? Because I think I know people come to me for confession or for counseling, and I'm thinking, okay, the issue's not spiritual, it's mental. It's psychological. How does that kind of interplay with you, especially knowing you were a seminarian? I mean, how do they treat you in the church? Like, could they accept you in the priesthood? Was that an issue for you?
Right. They actually did accept me knowing I didn't lie or keep anything from them. They knew what I was dealing with. And I went through interviews with psychologists, but not psychiatrists.
And
there's a differentiation to be made there.
A big one.
Yes. So... I really felt like it boosted my esteem to be accepted under those auspices, but I didn't realize that I was biting off more than I could chew.
Okay. No, I mean, it's intense environment for sure.
It was a very intense experience, and if you are not fully sewn together well, you can end up imploding, which is what I did after 3 years.
Well, let me tell you, I remember there were a few seminarians who were really struggling with it, and they brought everybody down just because they were so down. One of them was struggling because I think there were sexual issues. I mean, like, it was a very uncomfortable situation for me because he was latching on to me as a friend, but it looked like he wanted to latch on to me as something more.
Sure. And the latching on is a cry for help, of course.
Of course.
They say that almost 35% of people with mental illness is people that are dealing with sexuality orientation
Like homosexuality, bisexuality, transgenderism.
Sexual identity.
Yeah.
That's right. It's the highest, percentage, 35.
That. Yeah. I can imagine, because that's something very intimate, and we all are looking for validation through intimacy. Some people confuse intimacy with sex, which is very easy to do, which is why I think a lot of people have to realize the church is not as down on sex as they are down on it. Mm-hmm. We're more down on injustice than on sexual sins. Mm. And I think the church provides an atmosphere for people to experience intimacy without using your sexual parts. You know, right. I mean, that's just the reality. You know, as we're kind of coming to a close with this conversation, I just think that we've just literally scratched the surface. I mean, is
right. Oh, sure. Yeah, there's too much to be said, unfortunately.
There is too much. But if I can just sum things up, and I want to make sure that I'm doing that. First of all, we should not be afraid to talk about it. The stigma is useless for everybody. For someone who's going through depression and family members and caring loved ones, we got to be able to talk about that. How do you feel talking with me so bluntly and honestly and publicly?
Well, fortunately, since you and I have a history as friends, you've known me and you've seen me go through different cycles of depression and hypomania, and you haven't rejected me, you know, which is a big thing. Rejection sensitivity is very common in bipolar disorder. People are afraid of being rejected, and it's a very painful experience because what they need more than anything is acceptance.
But how about if you have to let somebody go, say, for example, in a professional environment? And someone is really not performing their tasks. And it's not because you hate them. It's just because they can't do this.
They can't perform well at work, for instance.
Yeah.
They oftentimes, yes, will get fired for that reason, for having that diagnosis of bipolar.
And that's really hurtful. So there's got to be a way that we let them know that it's not because of you. It's
very hard to take it professionally or to take it without it being feeling personal.
Heck, I can't. I mean, it would feel personal for me, and I'm not even struggling with it all. So we got to make sure that we're not afraid of the stigma. Let's get rid of it. Let's talk about it. Let's find the healthiest ways to go through it. I think community is going to be a good part of it. And I think just talking it out. Do you ever get tired of talking about it?
I do. And especially since I'm talking to people that don't have a clue about what's going on or a clue even about mental illnesses itself.
Mm.
So, yeah, I want to in some ways bury it and forget about it and almost act like it didn't happen.
Sure.
It doesn't exist. But like I said before, it's a chronic lifetime illness.
Okay. And so I guess the final question, because there's way more, and I wish I could just keep this recording going forever, but I got chicken to deal with here. I do want to ask you, what can I do as a Catholic priest to help you, Eddie Argar?
Sure, sure. For one thing, the seminaries unfortunately let people down when it comes to mental illness. And what I mean by that is that they bring in a lot of good speakers for formation, but I've never seen or heard anybody bring in a mental illness. And this as a professional, that doesn't make a lot of sense because priests are dealing with so many people that have so many types of mental illnesses.
They are.
And yet they go in blind or ignorant about what they're dealing with because they've never been exposed to it in the seminary. And before the seminary life, they were not exposed to it either. So they never really get an education until they hit the ground running as a young priest and they don't know what to say or do or how to direct that person and treat them and direct them to a professional.
Interesting. So, but that means like, what can I do for you? Because I'm not in seminary anymore. If I was teaching at a seminary, I would invite you in and have you speak on it.
Yeah.
I remember having one of our own seminarians actually speak to us about alcoholism. And he just kind of said, and he was a guy that you would never imagine to be an alcoholic.
Mm.
He was like a leader, super good looking, tall, disgusting, makes me sick, right? I mean, and he just got out there and was like, and I'm an alcoholic. And he kind of went through it and it was very impacting.
Mm.
Never heard anything about mental illness though.
Yeah, and it's too bad because it's such a high percentage of people that are experiencing it today.
So if you are listening to this and you are working with formation in any way, whether it be for religious women or men, seminary formation, even marriage counseling, I think we need to have a conversation about it, not to be heavy, but just to be educated. So Eddie Argar, I can't thank you enough for your openness and sharing and kind of like the peacefulness with which you've discussed all this. I hope that this was at least a good experience for you because it was for me. And when we return, I'm going to come back and share my carryout order with what I learned from this very deep dish discussion when we return in just a moment. And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with my carryout order. It was such a pleasure to talk, I don't know, so sincerely and so deeply with Eddie. He is such a good guy, and he's a good friend, and I'm just grateful that he's in my life because he's helped me to realize that what I knew of him wasn't all that true. And so we got to just realize that there's more to people than meets the eye. Way more to people than meets the eye. And we never know what people are struggling with in life. And what you need to do is to create at least an environment or an attitude that can welcome people to let them be them. But the thing that I'm just so pleased with is that, first of all, Eddie is trying very hard to find that balance in his life. And if it takes medication, then albeit, do it. But he also needs a sense of community, a group of people who are willing to listen. And it was really beautiful to know that even though we hadn't seen each other for many years, he can still call me out of the blue. And hopefully I will be able to take the call and hopefully just listen to him, even in the midst of his struggles. There's only so much we can do, but the one things we can do is we can learn about it. We can take away the stigma by just getting educated and then doing what we can to help, even if it's encouraging them to just get out of their head by being of a positive distraction. And please know this, it's not anyone's fault. You know, if they are going through some real struggles, it's not our fault. Unless, of course, we're not doing what we can to reach out and help them in some way or another. And one of the best things we can do to help them is just to pray for them and to make sure that that prayer changes us so that we can become more available to them. So I just want to thank Eddie for being so honest, for being so sincere, and for sharing with us a lot of deep information, which I hope you can take to your own prayer and to your own experiences. And if there is anything that we can do to help, all you got to do is reach out to us, but also reach out to your local church, reach out to your family, and hopefully you all have a good friend and a companion to walk with you in this journey. So once again, can't thank you enough for listening to this show, which is actually brought to you by my nonprofit organization, thetablefoundation.org, which seeks to harvest the power of food to do good. You can learn more at thetablefoundation.org. And I want to thank Eddie for joining me on the show. I'll definitely keep him in prayer, and hopefully you enjoyed this too. So if you did, make sure that you support us at patreon.com/fatherleofeeds. And between now and the next time we shoot the shiitake, stay hungry.
BreadBox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at KaneFord.com.